Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you very much for joining us. Our guests are Sean Dugan of the KTVA Channel 11, Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News, and Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet. It's been a very busy week in Juneau with a lot of action and non-action. A surprise, a shocker at the beginning, Governor Sean Parnell, Paul, throws in the towel on oil taxes, if I'm not using too much of a colloquial phrase.
He certainly did. I think it's been a rising frustration over the past weeks. He called the special session after failing last year and then again in the session this year to make any headway on his tax proposal. 8 days into the session, I think he finally saw the handwriting on the wall that this particular legislation was, according to the Senate Resources Committee anyway, too much like last year's. We're not going to do anything with this. We've got to work on this. We're a long way.
Last year, you mean the regular session?
The regular session. Yeah. And also from HB 110 from last year. A lot of that was still in there.
Which had passed.
It had passed the House.
Yeah.
So what happens is we get to the 8 days in, and he said, well, they've hardened their positions. We're not going anywhere. All of this follows a wonderful April. I wish I had the tape. The April 19th Resources Committee hearing, in which the Revenue Commissioner Brian Butcher came in, and from what I've seen on the film, he was talking Klingon to him. They had no idea what he was saying. They were confused. They couldn't. He would go this way.
What we have here is a failure to communicate.
Wow! And Lisa McGuire, she described herself as a supporter of oil tax reform, came away saying this thing dead, and it's silly.
And that should have been a big hint to the Parnell administration.
So I think it was, and here we are today. He said, you know, we got an election coming up. Enough's enough. I don't want to have this all over me at the end of the day. I'm just getting out. And that's what he did.
Steve McDonald, what's next? The blame game? Or are we well along into that game?
Yeah, it's Paul's fault. We're going to blame him.
It is
going to be the blame game. You're going to have the House and the governor blaming the Senate. The Senate's going to blame the governor. Oil industry is going to blame the Senate. To cover everybody, I think everybody's been blamed now. So I think that's what's going to happen. I really think one of the things that has to be lurking in the back of the governor's mind or the administration's mind anyways is there is an election coming up in August and in November, and most of the legislature is up for grabs at that particular point in time, and he may take this case to the people, to the voters, and hopefully get more of a supportive cast in the legislature next year. But I think that this is there's going to be a lot of people who do need to be blamed, and I think the governor and his folks have to be in there as well. I don't think this was a great job of leadership. I don't think there was a great deal of good communication. I think Paul pointing to that hearing the other day, I think you're absolutely right. That it was a lot of double talk. It wasn't very clear. It is a complex issue.
And then
issue.
We had Senator Pascavan today, if I might, interjecting that perhaps the governor was becoming unhinged.
Yeah, that's strong language.
That's pretty strong. That is strong. I don't know. I wouldn't go there. I don't know that. I just think that this is a big issue for the governor, and just to kind of not push it to the end of the legislative session and get a vote, even if he loses, just to quit like this, just to throw in the towel, as you said, that's just not the right thing to do. Get people on record. And you have plenty of time to negotiate yet.
Yeah.
Let's get Sean Dugan in here. Sean, Governor Parnell tried getting tough, then he tried conciliation. Perhaps he would have been better off if he'd taken a different order, but neither worked in any case. Yeah. Please explain.
Well, I wish I could explain. I think it really comes down to expectations. I think Governor Sean Parnell really expected that the special session would see some movement on what we've discussed on this program, which is the meaningful tax reform and what does that mean. But as Paul and Steve have said, when it came push came to shove in the Senate Resources Committee with the testimony of the Revenue Commissioner, they couldn't really, the administration couldn't really answer a lot of questions about, well, who's involved in talking to you about your numbers and what kind of guarantees do we get from the oil industry if we do this tax cut. And that testimony kind of, for me, signaled the beginning of the end. But as Steve mentioned, pulling out, not making them at least have a vote or fail on their own in the legislature, pulling out the governor, it was kind of like poking an angry bear, and that bear was the Senate, because they've been at odds for quite some time. And it was pretty obvious that the Senate wasn't going to go what the governor wanted, but they were looking at some tax breaks for new fields and some smaller producers. And I have to wonder if maybe some people in the administration were worried, well, if there's some kind of compromise in the Senate and the House and they get this piece done, do we then lose the momentum for the larger tax reform down the line? I don't know if that came into play on that, but it's certainly an interesting question to ask. And as you said, everybody's up for, almost the entire legislature is up for election this
go ahead, Steve.
Go back to that. You brought up Liesl McGuire. When they passed that tax break for new fields, and they kept the taxes on the legacy fields, Prudhoe, places like that, Liesl McGuire, who was in favor of that, came out and said, this is a good first step,
right.
I'm paraphrasing. We can go back and look at the other legacy fields and the tax break later on, but this is a good thing to get started. She said, there will be a stampede to Alaska. This is really lucrative. Maybe that's all you get right now, and maybe you go back for another shot at it next session, but you would have come away with something
and
that
it
would have been favorable.
It sent a big signal when she criticized the administration's bill, because clearly she should have been somebody they counted on.
Oh, absolutely. She is. I admire Liesl a lot. I think she's really smart. And she's always been a person who seeks compromise. She's not afraid to go across the aisle and get other ideas. I think she's a good lawmaker, and she was a great proponent for what the governor wanted to do. And perhaps she's right that tax break for new fields coming online, maybe that was a good first step, and you come
Sean,
back later.
Sean, I have a question for you, and then we'll just turn you loose.
Okay.
And,
that's a dangerous thing to do, but
I want to do
your
it.
Own peril, sir. Yeah.
One of the things that struck me is Parnell gave up, the governor gave up a serious weapon. What he gave up was the opportunity to campaign against or criticize the do-nothing Senate, because now they have the opportunity to say, we were ready to do something. We were on the verge of doing something, and we had the rug pulled out from under us.
Which they've already started, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, and we've seen that, and as Steve said, the blame game began yesterday with the statements from both the governor's office, the Senate, and the House. I think one of the senators was quite upset with the language the governor used when talking about them. But when it comes down to what happens next, and here's the danger of turning me loose. I just lost my train of thought.
Oh, no.
So
block that metaphor. We'll come back to you then, okay? That's
all right.
Happened to me,
appreciate
and I'm sorry,
that.
I shouldn't have done that. I was afraid I was going to forget, too, so the old guy's show. The senators, meanwhile, after the battle of dueling opinions from the Attorney General's office and the Legislative Affairs Agency, you can't, we're going to leave, we're staying. No, you're not. You can't withdraw a bill after it's been submitted. The senators have, for all intents and purposes, gone home.
They left, yeah. Yeah, they did. The House still in session today as we speak. They're very much concerned with the in-state gas line, which has kind of been, that's the third item on the call, the special session call. And the Speaker of the House, that's his baby. I can't see him saying, well, you're right, let's go home too. The Senate can be gone for 3 days if the House is still in session.
But he's going to have a hornet's nest in his own caucus. They don't want to sit around
They don't want to sit around there, but he wants them to deal with that gas line. So that'll be interesting to see how that turns out.
And if I may, I've come back to my senses now. So you're asking me what he lost, what he gave up. He put a lot of clout of his own clout on the line for the oil taxes, and it's been the keystone of his governorship and separating himself maybe from when he was lieutenant governor. And I wonder how this is going to affect Governor Parnell, not just with the electorate, but with the oil industry as well, because the changes that we were talking about, and Steve was mentioning, help new fields, new producers, doesn't do anything for the big three. And so you have to wonder how much that came into play with the way that the governor pulled that from the special session. But you're right. He doesn't have the opportunity to say, well, you guys failed to act. But he still does, because the Senate took their ball and went home. So he can still say, even after all of this, there will still be an argument about whose fault it was.
Well, and a good part of the public just wants results. Other than that, they just see the whole thing as a muddle.
Yeah, which it's become very muddled.
And meanwhile, while these guys are pointing fingers at each other, people in Fairbanks, your mom, is paying
$800 a month in the wintertime for heating oil, and that's only going to get worse. What's Fairbanks going to look like in 20 years? And frankly, there's a lot of communities in the bush that are much worse off.
Absolutely, but that gas line now, if this does indeed hold and they don't act on it this legislative session, it's another year pushed back.
We've got alignment but no tires on the car, so how far can you get with that?
That's not a speech the governor wants to make. Once again, I'm Michael Carey. I'm here with Paul Jenkins, Sean Dugan, and Steve McDonald. Paul.
I find myself wondering, last year at the end of the special session, the end of the session, we're fighting about this. The governor, the Senate went so far, if you recall, as to build special legislation so that he couldn't veto their projects. His legislation on energy was tied to hydro projects and everything else, and his wouldn't go if the price of oil didn't come up. And so here we are, and he didn't use his veto pen to punish anybody. So here we are this year, and then power unused is power ignored. I think that's where we are at this point. He didn't bring anybody in the room and set them down and say, see this pen?
Part of the problem here was if he was going to pick on senators, he'd have to pick on the House members too, that would have been tricky.
Everybody, you just pick the right ones, you get it done.
Okay, so, Steve McDonald, I'm sort of wondering here if part of what happened here is the complexity overwhelming people. I mean, this was a very complex issue, and there may be some in the industry who feel that Senator Pascavan, Senator Thomas, Senator Stedman, others used that argument as sort of cover, as an excuse. But it really is true. They were asked to do a lot, and wound up sort of, everybody got buried in it.
Then maybe they need to get out of the legislature, because these are the folks that we elect to go down and make these kinds of decisions. And if it's too hard for them, then maybe they better find another job. This is what the people of Alaska have put them down in Juneau for. Simple as that. They can't point fingers. There are people whose lives are really on the brink of disaster right now because of high energy prices.
Steve, this wasn't going to do anything about high energy prices.
The fact is,
a vote of confidence or something.
You're right, but the thing is this could scuttle again. Going back to that gas pipeline, that natural gas pipeline. Yes, it's not going to do anything for anybody next fall, but if they had done something back, 5 years ago, that thing would be online right now. We're always talking about, it's not going to help next fall, but it's maybe it'll help three winters from now. At some point in time, you got to make a decision. Now, it is a complex issue. I frankly don't understand all of that. I don't understand a lot of it. I do know that the basic argument is this: the pipe, there's less oil going through that Trans-Alaska oil pipeline. There's the oil companies say high taxes, very expensive place. Okay, we know that too. And I do know too that if they change the tax structure, then there's like $1 to $2 billion worth of revenue that comes out of the economy that'll go to the oil companies. And that's money that can be used to fuel construction jobs. So yeah, it is a tough choice right there. It's not an easy choice, but somebody's got to make it. They got elected to do it. So they had 30 days to really seriously concentrate on this issue. And they've had experts and they've had studies, and what more do they want?
Well, and just to add on to that real quickly, there hasn't been a lot of turnover in the legislature in the last 2 years, and this isn't an issue that they got dropped in their lap 30 days ago. They've been talking oil taxes between the House and the Senate for the last 2 years. Three sessions, two special sessions at least, maybe three
special
sessions.
Well, the downside of that would be have a bunch of people who know what they know and are dug in.
And I really think that's where we are. I think that their positions are hardened, and it just comes to, frankly, it's a failure of government between the executive and the legislative branch, and they can point fingers all day, but sooner or later, I agree with Steve, those fingers have to get turned back, because they've had a lot of time to discuss this, and here we are right back where we started.
Paul Jenkins, what's next, the election?
That's the next big thing, but I wonder, the bane of good government is voters' short memories. You pull 100 people off the sidewalk today, two of them will understand what's going on. 98 will go,
fortunately,
what?
They're both in this room.
And they're in this room, yeah. And it's not us either, if you know what I'm saying.
I was going to say it was us.
I don't see this having a huge effect on people. Don't understand it. They're still getting their permanent fund dividends.
Yes, yep, that's right.
There's people are talking about giving them free money for gas.
Let me try this on Sean Dugan. One of the things I wondered about is the longer this went on and Parnell made his arguments and made them forcefully, repeatedly, if sometimes in a campaign you wind up convincing people that you're wrong and some other opinion is right.
Yeah, and maybe that played into this. He had so long, and he's been working on this so long, and his arguments have really stayed pretty similar throughout the course of this legislation over the last 2 years. He may have just gotten to that point where he hardened the positions on the other side. Because as you said, he tried playing hardball, then he was conciliatory. He might have tried the other approach first, because the positions were already hardened. And then when he extends the olive branch by saying, I'm not going to veto a lot of projects, well, that really doesn't carry the same weight as it would maybe if the horse came before the cart.
Okay. Steve, we've seen this before in special sessions where the governor calls lawmakers to Juneau to address a really important subject. Subsistence comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Editorial writers, some of whom I know, write editorials saying, doing nothing is not an alternative.
Yeah.
The legislature must act. And the legislature goes home. Give us some historical perspective.
Well, take subsistence. That's a perfect example. 1999, Governor Knowles is in office. He wanted a constitutional amendment placed on the ballot, right, so voters could decide whether or not Alaska's constitution should be amended to fall in line with federal subsistence statutes. And he couldn't get that out of the legislature. You needed 3/4 of a vote to get it approved for the ballot. But he stuck with it. He called 2 special sessions on that issue, and he forced people to take a stand, make a vote, and they did. He didn't just say, all right, that's far enough, let's just go
and
home.
They did a lot of milling around, the legislature did down there.
They did, yeah, they did.
Sean.
Well, let's not forget, going back to oil taxes, for the last 2 years, the governor has been saying this is the most important thing, we have to do it now, we have to do it this year, the consequences of not doing it are too grave. And then it doesn't happen, and the same message is delivered. The consequences of not doing anything right now are too grave. This absolutely must get done. And then he pulls it out. So at what point do you say, how important is this really, and how much of that is rhetoric, and how much of that is actually, is this that important to get done right here, right now?
Yeah, and clearly, absent another special session in which a whole lot of people change their behavior and votes, the earliest that he could get this would be next February.
Yeah, and
even if a new legislature acted in a big hurry.
I really think a lot hinges on the elections. Mm-hmm. The faces that we're going to see and the personalities in Juneau will dictate whether this gets moving forward or stays where it is.
Let's go back to, again, we were talking about Senator McGuire before, and what she had said after the Senate had basically come to grips and passed the tax break for new fields and all. We see the legislature pulling its horns during the legislative session that's preceding an election. It's tough for them to make some hard decisions because
right.
You don't want to torque off the constituents. But maybe that would have been the way to do this, is take what I can get right now, that's for new fields, I'll take the tax break for new fields, come back when the pressure is off next year and see if we can strike a better deal with. Because folks like Senator French, his constituents don't want a tax break. And he, and Bill Welikowski, his constituents don't want a tax break.
And part of their problem is they're going to have a bunch of new constituents come election time.
That's right. Hollis French is going to have to campaign in a brand new House district.
Right.
He's a familiar House district, but the second one has been realigned. So he's got a tough election coming up. Those guys aren't going to give up their core values in an election season, especially when they've got a tough election coming up this fall. Probably.
Believe it or not, some other things did happen in Juneau and in Alaska. We need to turn to them. For instance, we now have a government entity that will examine the Film and Set Credit Bill to make sure that our films are film worthy here in Alaska to receive tax credits. And the quoting from the legislation or the purpose of this legislation: the public perception of state policy on the utilization and development of natural resources will be prominent. You're visualizing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, this is what happens when government gets involved in this stuff. That's the Alaska.
Well, I mean, seriously, I mean, that's an interesting point, because this is a whole bunch of free enterprise folks who've got themselves into subsidizing, and now they want to have certain terms.
Now they want to have terms and rules and regulations, and you have to do what I say. It's Big Brother. It's Alaska Film Incentive Review Board. It's going to be headed up by the commissioners of, I think it's Commerce, Labor, Natural Resources, and somebody else. I'm not even sure who it is. Revenue. Film experts all, I'm sure. And they're going to be considering things like this is just gets me, the Alaska economy, employment, fiscal health, and the natural resource development perceptions. So when you come up here and you have a perception that, hey, that guy looks like he's raping a stream. Well, we can't have that in there. Filmmakers are not going to put up with it. It's censorship. And they're going to laugh at him and go, get away from me. And that'll be the end of that.
That's why they have a thing called rewrite.
And do we really want all those high-level people who should be working on things like oil taxes and production? Do we want them combing through scripts to see what's being done?
Well, done so well.
Well, then it could get into... Why is Sean Penn in here?
Exactly.
I don't like politics, you know, or just about anybody. Sean, Hollywood doesn't have to come here.
No.
I mean, one of the things we know is they made films in Vancouver, Toronto, all over.
Washington State.
All over the North America and other places as well. And it's the mobility of capital and their crews. I mean, isn't that sort of, if we're going to, we have certain detractions already. We're far away, we're cold, we're expensive. Maybe we're putting another one in there.
Well, just started getting local casts. Let's not forget, we've had a few movies shot here now, so we've got a lot more locals trained up, as they say, to do things like be an assistant producer on the set or do set work or even more actors we have. And they're putting more hurdles in. Not for nothing, we checked the other day. There's something like 40 or 50 television shows, not movies, television shows currently shooting in the state of Alaska.
Isn't that something?
And there's 20 or 30 more trying to get here. So how does this affect them? For instance, there's one on gold mining. Now, are they going to go through the reality shows, or so-called reality shows, a fairly scripted reality, but are they going to watch every episode and say, well, you can't show them doing that, or you can't show them doing that? This kind of harkens back. What is this, the 1950s? And we got the Un-America Commission going through scripts and figuring out what... Our view of Alaska is the view that you have to have. So,
well, one thing nobody's going to be worried about is the pornography industry is true free enterprise, so they won't be affected by this. Perhaps.
You might be surprised, actually, but that might be another show.
Steve, look, lots of movies have been made. I mean, they make movies in Hollywood all the time. Chinatown basically sent the people who created the water system from Los Angeles, stole it. Yeah. If you have films about New York City, the greedy Wall Street capitalist is a standard figure, not to mention crime in the streets. But I guess we're not going to get that here.
I don't think they'd shoot something like Goodfellas here or something like that. But I think New York has the attitude of, you know, just spell our name right. You can shoot here, whatever. They've got a long history with the film industry, so does L.A., you know, actually, it's very expensive to shoot in California. That's why you see so many films they're looking for other locations. So, this could be viewed by Hollywood as censorship. And do we really want to subject our script to input from these guys? Now they may,
or
just
maybe
say,
they'll just say it's fine given what I'm doing here and. Here we go.
Well, yeah.
Quickly,
this might
Sean.
Be called the On Deadly Ground portion of this, because really this is geared to stop movies like that from being made. That's Steven Seagal. Now, I think that's something maybe we can all agree on if something good comes out.
Okay. Let's move on once again. Sean, the municipal election is over, but the squabble continues.
Absolutely.
What do we know at the present time now that we have the report of the Election Commission and... what Ernie Hall has to say.
Well, the election
assembly chairman.
Absolutely. The Election Commission basically came out and said that, contrary to earlier reports, more than half of the precincts ran out of ballots. There had been some reported problems with some seals on Diebold machines. Those are the big machines you want voting day. You go stick your, you try to get your ballot to get in there. the Election Commission has looked over everything, talked to the people that they said that said they could not vote. I think there were 60 or 30, between 30 and 60 of those. They've decided that it's not worthy to hire an independent investigator to look into the commission, and that we shouldn't have a new election. We should certify this election. The assembly should do that. Ernie Hall says that he's going to, he's said this long before, and we checked, he still says this, that they're going to hire an independent investigator. So I wouldn't see this election being certified anytime soon. I don't see how the assembly certifies it while an investigation is going on.
I don't quite understand the process of, don't you have to certify it so that people can take office at some point?
You do, and that's, we're starting to get to that point. So I think the assembly is, again, this is something they really haven't, just like with what's going on in Juneau. Nobody really knows how to play this from here. But Ernie Hall
has... Because we haven't done it before.
No, and he said he's going to have an investigation. I think, frankly, for the public, I think they have to have at least some look from the outside, or people are always going to question what happened in this election.
Okay, Paul, very briefly, we're almost out of time, but reapportionment has become redistricting something of a ping-pong game. Where are we in the midst of the pings and the pongs?
Well, we're in the Superior Court in Fairbanks, and the redistricting board has been... has had trouble getting this its redistricting plan approved, and is wondering whether it should go to the Supreme Court, State Supreme Court, right away, and just avoid all the complications and maybe get a better deal, as you pointed out earlier. And that's where we are. This thing, it's like everything else in Alaska, it's going to be in court till it's fixed.
And at the present time, they're sort of arguing that we're hoping that our interim plan will be approved.
Will it be approved? And if not, they can, if they can get the original judge to approve the original plan, which he disapproved to start with.
And there's skepticism that they'll be successful there, but we'll see. Lawyers. We're about out of time. Thank you for joining us on Alaska Edition.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.